Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scarsbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, Joan Knows, a program which brings you a bird's eye view of the Vatican Week. That's with Joan Lewis, who's EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome. But first, we bring you our weekly reflection on the Sunday Gospel. For this 10th Sunday in Ordinary Time, that's with the spiritual director of the Pontifical Bader College here in Rome, Monsignor Peter Verity. A programme that begins, as always, with Sean Patrick Lovett reading this week's Gospel for us.
Jesus journeyed to a city called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd accompanied him. As he drew near to the gate of the city, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. A large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he was moved with pity for her and said to her, "Do not weep." He stepped forward and touched the coffin. At this the bearers halted, and he said, "Young man, I tell you, arise." The dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, exclaiming, "A great prophet has arisen in our midst, and God has visited his people." This report about him spread through the whole of Judea and in all the surrounding region.
There is one word which is key to understanding today's Gospel. I'll come to that in a few moments, but first let's have a look at the story itself. It is the story of the cure of the son of a widow from the town of Nain. At its face value, we are presented with a tragic situation. A woman whose husband had previously died has now lost her only son. Perhaps this may even be her only child, although the Gospel doesn't tell us that. It is hard to imagine the emptiness and devastation in her life. She is beside herself with grief. What does the future hold? How can she possibly cope? The Gospel tells us a large crowd from the city was with her. She is, in a sense, being carried along by the crowd. People have rallied round to help. Friends, neighbours, acquaintances, they feel for her and want to help her. What can they say? How are they to react? There are no words, but their presence is important. If they can do nothing else, they can at least be there for her. This tragedy should not be borne alone. They are there to suffer with her, and that, after all, is the true meaning of the word compassion, suffering with, compassio. As Jesus draws near to the city, he sees the funeral procession and quickly takes in what is going on. He offers his presence also and his compassion. He will suffer with her too. showing all of us who hear this story that God is present in our suffering and that he is a God of compassion who suffers with us no matter how difficult our situation may be. Jesus, we are told, was moved with pity for her, indicating the way God looks on us when we are suffering. Jesus goes to speak to her, simple words, "Do not weep," and a simple action. He touches the coffin and orders the young man to get up. At this point of the story comes the key word, which will help us to unlock the spiritual depths of the gospel passage. This is the word which Jesus uses in his command to the young man. The word, arise. "Young man, I tell you, arise." On one level, this can simply mean, sit up, get out of the coffin. But the word can also mean very much more for us. There are echoes here of the command of Jesus to the dead Lazarus, unbind him, let him go free. The very word arise itself also reminds us of the first Easter Sunday, the day of resurrection. This command of Jesus to the young man, therefore, is about new life, the life of faith, the life of the risen Lord. It is a command to move away from the realm of death into the light of new life. Another word which is often used for this is conversion. And this is what today's gospel passage is really about. The story asks us to reflect on aspects of our lives when there has been a conversion, or perhaps we could say when there has been a resurrection. We'll have a brief look at two situations which might resonate with some of you, and then explore what spiritual insights can benefit all of us. Firstly, conversion is the word used when someone changes from no faith or belief in God to the Christian faith. Some people will be able to recall such a time of their own conversion to Christ. In some cases, this may have been like the experience St. Paul had in his conversion on the road to Damascus. And it is interesting that the second reading of today's Mass is one of Paul's own accounts of his conversion, the one from his letter to the Galatians. Some people, although by no means everyone, do experience a sort of conversion from a life which is ignorant of God and religion to a new awareness of God's love and care. At its heart, it is a move into a realization of God's love for me personally. Have a new sense of who I am as someone created and loved unconditionally by God. Secondly, there is a sort of conversion that takes place within the faith, a call to live with a new depth and vitality for the faith. This may happen to a person who has been brought up as a Catholic, but for whom the faith has simply been inherited from their parents. Here, the conversion is to make a living faith which is personal and real. A spiritual writer from Scotland, Father Jock Dalrymple, wrote about this type of conversion shortly before he died in 1985. "Christian conversion takes place," he wrote, "when a man or woman who has hitherto led a routine religious life suddenly realizes that God is real. What up to then was an impersonal, slightly routine, rather notional, not much regarded acceptance that God exists and Jesus Christ, his Son, is our Lord, suddenly becomes very real indeed and very personal. He becomes the center of my life." I think this quote sums this up very well. Jesus' command to the young man, "I tell you, arise," is addressed to all of us, and many may recall occasions when they were aware of faith becoming alive and vital. Today's Gospel, therefore, encourages us to reflect on these conversion events in our past lives. but the command of Jesus to arise is also something which is addressed to each of us every day. And it is here that today's gospel really hits home. Daily conversion is readily available to us. It can come about through the little things of our lives, our daily experiences, the people we meet, the things that happen to us, the beauty of nature, even some inspiring news or programme on the television. It can happen through our reading of the scriptures, our times of prayer, our taking part in the liturgy of the church. In these and at other times, we may be aware of a gentle call from the Lord to arise, to go beyond the mundane, the things that hold us down, to rise up in order to live with the life of the risen Christ. Each evening, when you look back over the day, notice these things and give thanks for them. They are the moments when you are invited to a new awareness of the presence of the infinite God surrounding you at all times and everywhere. When you look back over the day, hear Jesus inviting you, as he did the young man in today's gospel. Let's hear again in the words of the gospel exactly what happened at this key moment. Jesus stepped forward and touched the coffin. At this the bearers halted, and he said, "Young man, I tell you, arise." Notice the words, "the bearers halted." Perhaps this is showing us that we need to pause and be still if we are to hear Jesus. Inner silence is vital for encountering God. If our lives are crowded out with busyness and worry, work and material concerns, if there is no stillness and contemplative silence in our lives, the voice of Jesus will be muted. And so, in your imagination, see Jesus stepping forward, touching the dead parts of your life, inviting you to be still enough to recognise him. And then hear Jesus' words addressed to you personally, not young man, but your name, Peter, Mary, John, Elizabeth, I tell you, arise. Arise from your busyness, your worry, your concern. Accept the new life I am offering you. Live in a new way. Where will the call to conversion come from for you today? Are you ready to recognise it? Are you still enough and away from the busyness and cares of life to be able to hear it? As you listen to the story of the widow of Nain, hear Jesus say to you, "Today, I tell you, arise."
And many thanks there to Monsignor Peter Verity, the spiritual director at the Pontifical Beda College here in Rome, for bringing us this reflection. Meanwhile, time to join Joan Lewis. EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome. She brings us the Vatican Week in review. Well, Joan, welcome back.
Another amazing week. You know, as I prepare the news items for the week, I get kind of breathless. I'm sitting at my desk going, "The Pope did what?" You make a summary of all of his activities, plus we know the morning masses, to which we could dedicate another 20-minute show every week, just what he says in his amazing homilies, his food for life, his life's little lessons homilies every day. But I think probably if we want to start with a really big day, and if we only focused on one day of the past week, it would be Sunday. And starting, an amazing day. First of all, of course, at the Angelus, where he deplored all wars, and he asked the kidnappers to, any kidnappers anywhere in the world, and we know this is happening in Syria as well. There's two Christian bishops that have been kidnapped, but the Pope did speak about the war that he said has inflamed Syria for 2 years, affecting the civilian population that aspires to peace, injustice, and understanding. And he said, of course, a troubled situation of war always brings tragic consequences, death, destruction, massive economic and environmental damage, as well as the kidnapping. And even though he spoke, urged the world's leaders to get together, to dialogue in the first place, forget war and weapons, but to dialogue and come to some kind of a peaceful conclusion of this, he did say there's many conflicts taking place in the world, but there's also signs of hope. And I thought that was lovely to speak of the scourges of war, but end on a hopeful note. But that's very much, I think, Pope Francis's way of saying things. And he did mention the recent steps taken in Latin American countries towards reconciliation and peace. And then he made an announcement. He told the people that he celebrated his daily morning mass at the Santa Marta. And I could be wrong on this, but I don't think he normally, for Sunday, has guests at his morning mass. The other 6 days of the week, yes. But he said Sunday, he celebrated morning mass with wounded soldiers and family members of servicemen who had fallen in peacekeeping missions that seek to promote reconciliation and peace in countries where so much blood of one's brothers and sisters is still spilled in wars that are always madness. And of course, the Vatican did publish his very beautiful, moving homily about war and so forth at that mass, and some very wonderful pictures. And that's how Pope Francis began his Sunday, and then how he ended it anyway in late afternoon was absolutely astonishing, history-making event in the church. There was, from 5 to 6 Rome time in St. Peter's Basilica, an extraordinarily beautiful ceremony of Eucharistic adoration lasting for an hour. And then, simultaneously with the absolute rest of the world, with the cathedrals all around the world, people were in sync, if you will, with Rome for the Eucharistic adoration. So you had 24 different time zones. You had cardinals, bishops, faithful from all over the world praying. And there were two specific intentions of the Holy Father, covering some of what we just talked about, actually, peace and so forth in the world, and then covering the tragedies of people who are exploited by others, whether they're persons who are being trafficked or whatever. So,
John, Pope Francis tends to fly very high, but then he gets down to basics, doesn't he? In the sense that he relates what he says to our everyday lives.
He brings it down in basics, but also, I mean, in language we can all understand and relate to. It's as if the Holy Father hasn't sat in an office preparing a verbally demanding speech that you have to listen to every word. It's as if he's sitting next to you and saying, hey, Joan, Veronica, did you know that? And he just talks in language that we understand and gets his point across, and that's why I often call it life's little lessons, homilies, because that's exactly what it's like. So Sunday was an amazing day. And Monday, I have to say, being of that generation that was once in the presence of Blessed Pope John the 23rd, who died on June 3rd, 1963, so 50 years ago, and a big group of faithful came from Bergamo, northern Italy, where he was born, and the Bishop of Bergamo said Mass in St. Peter's. And then the Pope came in, and what a joyful, wonderful meeting this was. He just kind of walked around the basilica and he shook hands. They were mostly towards the altar of the chair, of course. Oh, and then he did go and he prayed before the tomb of Blessed John the 23rd, because his body is preserved. So you can see the Pope almost as he was in life. And it's very, very amazing for any of us who, as I said, were in his presence. I attended an audience of his in March 1961, folks, and the audiences then, there was no audience hall. So the audiences were held in what's known in the Vatican as the Hall of Blessings. It's a great big hall above the atrium of St. Peter's Square, and that's where the popes met people until in the early 70s we had the now known as the Paul VI Hall. So that was a very beautiful talk that the Holy Father gave about his predecessor to the people of Bergamo and the Bishop of Bergamo and Francesco Beschi. So a very wonderful event, but it's like the Pope walks in the room, hey, things are going to get better. Just his mere presence in the room, or like Wednesday at the audience, you know, you're watching me go around the square. He's 15, 20 minutes or something in this wildly applauding crowd. He's moving around in the Popemobile.
It really is a case of the Pope and the people. He feels so at ease with people, doesn't he? Second nature to him, really.
Well, he does. And then I love it. Every single week since he's been Pope, he gets up to the protected area where he sits. I call it a stage. I know that's not the right word. He gets up there and he sits down. He gives you this wonderful, almost impish smile. And he says, Fratelli e sorelle, brothers and sisters. Then he simply says two words that 100,000 people applaud. He says, Buongiorno, good morning. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And so last Wednesday's catechesis, if we could give only one homily or catechesis of the week on this show in its entirety, I would have picked myself Wednesday's. The Pope talked about he decried the throwaway culture that we have, the economies without ethics. And, you know, he said, for example, that if somebody's computer gets ruined, you're very, very upset and your life is turned upside down. But if you read about a homeless person under a bridge dying, it doesn't make the news. And he was saying, we can all relate to this, reading the papers of the things that make the headlines, which really don't have anything to do very often with man, with mankind, with his dignity, with his dying. Why is a man homeless? Why was he under a bridge? And, you know, and why did he die? And so the Pope did decry this culture of throwing things away, a culture of waste. What could we do? He even talked about food, actually, at the very end. And he said he grew up, and I think a lot of us can remember mothers and grandmothers and certainly anybody who lived, like, through the Second World War, maybe our grandparents, the Great Depression. You didn't throw anything away. And you might have to throw away a chicken bone because you couldn't eat that. But, I mean, other than that, you were very, very careful about what you ate, how much you ate. You may not have had that much. So you certainly didn't throw anything away.
He actually said it was like stealing, didn't he? Those were the words he used.
Yes, he did. He's like stealing, exactly, from the poor. And so it was a very amazing talk. And folks, you know, all of these homilies and talks are on the Vatican website. So, and they're in your language. So for heaven's sakes, go there. And if you're impressed, you know, read, and you should be, read those homilies. And then, you know, Thursday, I was looking at the headlines of just Thursday's news. Friday, we know the Pope met some more new ambassadors. But Thursday, it would take you like 3 minutes just to read the headlines. He received the new ambassador from the Islamic Republic of Iran. There's an ambassador to the Holy See. Oh, by the way, we also learned this week that the Holy Father, this is very interesting, he is going to spend the summer in the Vatican, actually, except for his week in Vatican City in Rome, except for his week in Brazil for World Youth Day, July 22 to 29. There will be no audiences in July, but the Pope will be staying in Rome, kind of solidarity with people who cannot afford vacations or don't have air conditioning and have to live through the heat and everything else. So we did learn on Thursday that he will be staying here. And it seems that actually Pope Benedict, Emeritus Pope Benedict XVI, will be spending some time at Castel Gandolfo. So, I think he'll go, Francis, I think, will go maybe on weekends for an Angelus, something like
yeah,
that, but not to stay. Yes, exactly. So we learned that.
Yeah, and then he'll pick up on with the audiences in August.
Yes, on August, I think, 7th, something like that.
The first Wednesday.
Is the very first one. And there, so we learned that. And then the Pope also addressed, and this was lovely, there's the Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy. That's the school that trains Vatican diplomats. So a diplomat in the Vatican, I'm sure our listeners have heard or read the word nuncio a great deal, and that's really a papal ambassador. They always have the rank of archbishop, by the way. So just an amazing day of meetings, an amazing day, week, of communications. We focus, obviously, in the show on the papal news, but on the side, there's many interesting press conferences, documents are presented. One was presented just this week on receiving Christ in refugees and persons who are forcibly uprooted. A fascinating conference. And then there was a communique from the bilateral working commission between the Holy See and Israel. There's a number of very thorny issues to solve between the two states who in 1993, December, declared diplomatic relations, but there's issues concerning the tax exempt status of church buildings, the ownership actually of a number of church properties and so forth. I mean, the two sides have been meeting for 20 years trying to solve principally, you know, three issues that they obviously can't agree on if they haven't done it for 20 years. So it's like, okay, I've done the show. I'm going to go home and rest because there's going to be another big week ahead of us with Pope Francis. But actually, I will be traveling.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, so
you're going to Vietnam.
So amazing. I'm going to Vietnam.
So why are you going to Vietnam?
I leave Saturday. There is an American priest, a servant of God, Father Vincent Capodanno, a Maryknoll missionary priest who was in Taiwan before he went to Vietnam. He was killed in the war trying to save the lives of the Marines that he said Mass for and heard confessions and ministered to as a chaplain. And interestingly enough, I learned from a Vietnamese friend that the Bishop of Da Nang, and it's near Da Nang, the battlefield where Father Capodanno died, and his name is Italian. He is his own father came from Gaeta, Italy, which is south of here near Naples. And there's a big Piazza Capodanno in Gaeta. So his cause for beatification is in Rome. And I learned from a priest friend of mine that Bishop Tree of Da Nang, where I will be for 3 days, Bishop Tree of Da Nang has dedicated the diocese to Father Capodanno. And he's actually asked the faithful to pray to Father Capodanno to intercede, you know, to our Lord in the case of whatever their need may be. And if there's anything they consider to be miraculous, like a cure, they're to report it to the bishop, who will then bring it to Rome.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Well, God bless.
You are listening there to Joan Lewis, EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome, who's just brought us the Vatican Week in review. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we won't be back again at this same time tomorrow, but we will be back again at this same time next weekend. So be sure to join us then. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.va, and then be sure to click on the English World icon. You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.